Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil. Bellerín, qué golazo.
Magnífico.
Gol. Qué golazo de Bellerín. Gol del Arsenal. Gran gol de Bellerín, 1-0.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you feeling this Monday morning? Good weekend?
It was a good weekend. I'm still feeling a little worse for wear. As you know, we had the Arsblog five-a-side tournament on Saturday, and I'm not a natural athlete, so the consequences of that particular excursion are still with me.
Yes. Yes.
Can you empathise with that?
I certainly can. Certainly with the not a natural athlete thing. I'm very much down with that. It should be noted that your brother scored the winning penalty.
He did. He did. In what I feared would be a terrible omen for the weekend's events.
Mm.
As far as Chelsea go. But yeah, no, he did. He outshone me. I didn't score a single goal in the tournament, and my team didn't win a single game.
Mm.
I mean, I'm sure that's just coincidence.
But, yeah, you know what I think? I think you need a new goalkeeper, a new defensive midfielder, a world-class striker, and whatever else it was he said that we needed.
That would be good, wouldn't it? Four new players and a world-class striker.
Yes, yes.
But you yourself picked up the Golden Boot trophy.
Correct. I scored a lot of goals.
Amazing.
A lot of goals. Yeah, we didn't do particularly well as a team in terms of our overall results. I think we won one, lost two, and drew one. But
right.
Yeah.
But you're more about the individual. I mean, you're like the Cristiano Ronaldo.
Oh, absolutely.
Tournament.
Yeah. I mean, I was topless celebrating my goals, getting my neck muscles out there for everyone. It was majestic, it has to be said. But sure. No, great fun overall, and that is why I'm a little bit croaky this morning. You know, that tends to happen when, you know, there's the odd drink taken when this event takes place, you see.
Yeah, that can be the case. I escaped, actually, slightly early because I went to see The Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Spoiler alert.
Okay.
Yeah, spoiler alert. The world is in danger and they save it.
Wow.
So
who could have seen that coming?
If you're thinking about going to see it, don't bother now. You know the whole plot.
Yes. Well, I wasn't thinking about going to see it.
No?
No, not really. I'm not a huge fan of the cinema in general. There's too many people around me eating and things. I don't like that. But Mrs. Bloggs has already seen it as well, because she had to do a film review for RTE. She enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's all right. There was a woman sat right in front of me who was talking the whole way through. That was pretty annoying.
Yeah.
I said something, you know, but I hate doing that. I'm not naturally confrontational.
What did you say? I'm
like the opposite of Roy Keane. I'm not a sportsman. I'm not confrontational. I said, shh. So, you know, I think I made my feelings pretty clear.
Yeah, she was left in no doubt as to what your message was. And did she
for a short period of time, but, you know, it was a sticking plaster over the problem.
I think
it peeled off.
I think that in those circumstances, it should be legal, in fact, almost mandatory, to give somebody a good cuff around the side of the head. Like, if they're in front of you and they're talking in the cinema and you go, shh, and they stop, okay, fair enough. But if they continue, you should be able to just sort of go and give them a smack. Just nothing too hard, but just enough to make them realise that they should shut the fuck up. I don't think that's...
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. By the way, some breaking news I've just seen on my Twitter timeline. Thomas Vermaelen has been declared fit.
Hallelujah.
8 months after joining Barcelona. I didn't think I'd see the day.
Well, I'm actually quite happy for him. He was not a bad guy.
I am as well, yeah. Let's hope it lasts.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That is good news. I had the rather bizarre situation yesterday where having been in London since Friday, I had to go home to Dublin to work on the game, which was taking place yards from where I was staying. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, that is surreal. Was the whole Cess return too emotional for you to be that close to? Just thought, yeah, I've got to flee the country.
Yeah, I can't. I just can't. No, I mean, it was just pure having to work on the game. And Tom, thankfully, did the first half of the live blog because I got in with just moments to spare. But there was the match report and the player ratings and writing for ESPN and all those things, which I wouldn't have been able to do had I actually been in London, which is quite strange. But there you go. So shall we talk?
You did see the whole game, though.
I did. Yeah, I saw it all. I saw it all with my eyes.
Maybe we should talk about it on this podcast.
I was just going to say that perhaps this is something that we should talk about. Okay. What did you think of the game?
Great opening question.
It was good. I mean, we're getting right on point here.
I didn't know you were preparing the questions now. I didn't think it was the most exciting match, to be honest with you.
I thought the first half was quite good. I thought there was an intensity to the first half that really dissipated in the second. You know, I thought if that had sort of kept up during the second half, it might well have been a slightly more interesting game. But it didn't, obviously.
No, it felt like around the hour mark it really began to peter out. I wrote about this on my blog. I felt sort of frustrated after the game, but in a different way to how I usually feel after Chelsea matches. Usually it's frustration at the fact we've sort of humiliated ourselves and caused our own undoing. Mm. Whereas on this occasion, I was just annoyed that we weren't able to humiliate them. You know, I really thought this was a great chance to get over that, what is it, dozen games without beating Mourinho, 13 now.
Yeah.
And I was probably foolishly optimistic. You know, in my head, I kind of had visions of taking them apart just with a really high-intensity game. But the thing is, they're not like Liverpool. They won't crumble under that kind of pressure. And
yeah, they're
so organised.
They're kind of, you know, much as it pains us to say it, they're good. You know, this is the difference between them and Liverpool. They're actually good and really well organised defensively. And, you know, they've got a manager who, while certainly the biggest cunt in the entire world ever, he's just so experienced at doing exactly what he did yesterday. Like, they killed the game completely in the second half. We did have our chances, but, you know, even in the first half, when we had lots of the ball, I think they had the more dangerous moments. What were your thoughts on the penalty incidents then? The first one, Oscar and Bellerin.
Which one is that? Is that the one where Oscar just sort of falls over into the penalty box?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was to me a clear dive, that one, yeah.
Agree.
In fact, I tweeted saying something about Oscar diving or whatever, and then that tweet obviously got picked up later by a number of Chelsea fans who thought I was referring to the incident with David Ospina.
Oh, well, that was clearly a dive as well.
Yeah. They were like, how could you say he's diving? He'd been taken to hospital. But, yeah, which made me chuckle slightly, although obviously let's hope his head's okay. So, yeah, I thought that one was nothing at all.
Yeah. The incident then with Ospina and Oscar, when Oscar dived into Ospina's face with his own face, which was pretty dangerous.
Very dangerous challenge. Very dangerous.
You know. Penalty?
It's a really weird one because, obviously, it shouldn't be allowed what Ospina did. However, the point was made by a few people yesterday, and I think it's true, is that once a shot has been got away, it's very rare to see a foul given for anything that comes after the shot. It's strange, isn't it?
Because if a player played a pass,
yeah,
and then got absolutely creamed out of it by an opponent, then generally you get a free kick if they didn't get any advantage. And Chelsea didn't necessarily get an advantage when Bellerin headed the ball around the post. But, you know, I think there was something a little bit worrying about the fact that Oscar was allowed to continue. I saw a video this morning of him, I think it was NBC were showing footage of it, and, he's lying there after getting his head smashed off Ospina's head, and he's kind of like... You know, you can see him trying not to pass out, and maybe he does pass out very briefly. But there's an issue there, isn't there, with concussion and head injuries and all that?
Yeah, it was a big theme last
season. Like, I don't generally don't give a fuck because it's, you know, a Chelsea player, but the general point, football doesn't seem to take it very seriously.
No, they don't, and they ought to, really. I mean, yeah, it's a bit of a worry, and I think that harsh, you know, stricter rules probably should come in. But as for the actual incident, I mean, yeah, it ought to be a penalty.
Mm.
But for some reason, referees are very low. It's like if you get a shot away, they kind of deem that the ultimate advantage, and so they never pull anything back from that circumstance. But yeah, I thought, I mean, it's a clear foul, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, Fabregas, Cazorla?
Not, that was quite a bad dive, I thought.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Cazorla's got his leg hung out. The stupid thing is, if Fabregas doesn't dive, then you don't know what happens after that. There's possibility that, you know, there is a genuine foul and he might win a penalty. But he sees the leg, goes to ground, Cazorla withdraws the leg. Yes, he clips him, but it's not a trip.
Yeah.
Is that your impression?
Yeah, that would be mine. I mean, look, this whole idea that there's contact, you know, sometimes you see, I mentioned it on the blog today, you know, a player is running and there's a hand just put gently on his shoulder and the player goes down and they justify that as a penalty because there's contact. You know, contact does not mean that it's a foul. Or surely the only contact that should be that should award a penalty is when the contact is sufficient for the player to be put off their stride or tumbled over, you know. So
I agree with that. So what did you make of the Gary Cahill handball incident then?
I kind of am with Good Player on this one. I'm just going to read out what he wrote about it because I think this is one of those ones that players get away with all the time. Good Player says, I'm not a great one for claiming handballs, but the reality is that just as Cahill throwing himself to the ground like that gave him a better chance of blocking the ball with his legs, it also significantly increased the likelihood of the ball hitting his arms. So while it's true to say he couldn't get his arms out of the way, he was very much responsible for putting them there in the first place. So, you know, I'm kind of... we've seen penalties like that given, but we've also seen players get away with making actual saves from time to time because of the way that they go in to block the ball. And people say, well, you know, when you throw yourself in like that, you know, your hands are in that position, etc., etc. It's ball to hand. But, you know, that's not a natural position for a player to be in, like skidding along on his back with his arms in the air. So, you know, I think there's a discussion to be had on that one.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's... Again, it's very hard to get a penalty for handball these days, I think. The ones you see given are ones where a cross comes in the box and a player jumps up and punches it away. They're the most regular ones you've seen given. But anything where there's proximity, you know, where it's like the player, well, his hand was there, then it's very, very rare, which maybe needs looking at. Look, it could have been given, but equally I wasn't too disappointed to see it not. It's one of those that, There's a vagueness about that rule, and you kind of have to accept that they're not all going to go your way. Especially seeing as we got away with one at the other end. I know that's not the right way for it to be, but I was happy to sort of call it even at that point.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, fair enough. Exactly. What should happen doesn't always happen, and that's part and parcel of it. There were, you know, at least some attempts from the manager to try and win the game late on. It was interesting that the subs were as late as they were. Danny Welbeck, 77 minutes. Theo Walcott, 84 minutes. Perhaps some people a little worried that we took Coquelin off. It might leave us exposed. You know, I think there was some merit to the ambition to try and do it. But also it spoke of a more cautious approach from Arsene Wenger that it took place later in the game. Those changes were so late.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's the sort of paradox of this result, really, is that actually Arsenal approached this game very well. I thought their game management, which is something which is usually something we've been criticised for, was actually very good. You know, I thought we contained Chelsea for long periods, and when they did threaten on the break, we had that little cynical edge, didn't we? I mean, I know Chelsea are a cynical team, but you won't see four more cynical bookings than the ones Arsenal picked up.
Yeah, that was good. That was really good.
You know. That is good. That shows, you know, a bit of development, a bit of maturity in the decision making, and it's also the draw is a decent result. You know, in in isolation, or, you know, I think drawing against Chelsea, there's no shame in that at all. Mm. You know, and it keeps us very much on course for second or third place, especially with United dropping points. And actually, although we didn't go for it until the last 10 minutes or so, I sort of think that's something to be commended too, because Arsene Wenger's repeatedly said in press conferences after defeats, if you can't win a game, don't lose it. And I actually thought it was quite commendable that he stuck by that, even though personally he must have been absolutely desperate to get the win. You know, he's got this kind of this long-standing record against Mourinho, but that was overlooked in favour of the broader interests of the team and the club.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I get that as well. And if we had lost the game trying desperately to win it, you do get accused then of being naive or being, you know, immature as a team because you've left yourself exposed. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, there's some positives there. And I think in general, this season in the games against the bigger sides, we have been better. That the progress has been made. The gap is certainly smaller. You know, so it's, yeah, I mean, I get that. The caution, I think, perhaps inhibited us a little bit in terms of the way that we attacked. You know, we didn't get quite as gung-ho as we have done in previous years, but maybe that's part of the lessons that we have to learn. That, you know, a point sometimes is better than no points at all. And, you know, you look at certain games in the past where we have shot ourselves in the foot with the way that we've tried to win a game that we didn't necessarily need to, or put ourselves in position. You think back to Monaco, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe there's a positive to be taken there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Arsene Wenger after the game said he was disappointed in the quality of our final ball. And I think that's valid. I think sometimes we got into decent positions in the final third, but the passing was not what it has been, say, in recent weeks in the Premier League.
Mm.
I thought what was interesting as well is that obviously we saw Olivier Giroud marshalled more effectively than he has been for some time. You know, I think he came up against a pair of very experienced centre-halves and had actually quite a difficult afternoon.
Yeah.
So I think that massively hindered our attacking game too.
Yeah, I mean, there were moments, I think, where perhaps in the final third we didn't do quite enough or quite as much as we should have. I liked Ozil. I thought Alexis struggled a little bit, to be perfectly honest.
They seemed
to know what he was going to do. You know, there wasn't maybe the unpredictability to his game that has been there in the early part of the season. So that kind of blunts you a little bit. I'm not sure Giroud got the greatest service in the world either. Meet and drink those crosses for Terry and Cahill.
Yeah, there were a lot of crosses into the box where he was pretty much isolated in there. And as you say, that's exactly the kind of play they want to defend against, isn't it? That's ideal for them. As for Alexis, I agree. He was a bit off. His passing percentage was the lowest, I think, of the outfield players.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's often the case with a guy like him because he does take a lot of risk. But I did think there was a couple of occasions where he misplaced passes without much pressure on him. But he was on the end of an absolute battering from Branislav Ivanovic.
He was fouled
three times in the first 8 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, that one where he put his studs down the Achilles, that's got to be a yellow card. You know, when Coquelin got a yellow card for a little push on Hazard, and he lets a guy... I mean, that drives me mad, where the referees, or you hear the commentators say, well, you know, early in the game, the referee doesn't want to start dishing out yellow cards, etc. But if an offence is worthy of a yellow card, it doesn't matter whether it's been 30 seconds into the game or 90 minutes. You know, a yellow card is a yellow card. A yellow card offence should take a yellow card. It's got nothing to do with when it happens.
No, I would agree with that. Other positives, I actually thought Hector Bellerin, you know, who was a bit of a surprise selection for some. Many thought Mathieu Debuchy would start. I thought he did pretty well against Eden Hazard, who, you know, was named Player of the Year last season but barely had a kick, did he? I mean, I didn't notice him in the game.
Yeah. I mean, the central defence was good as well. You know, as much as people are talking about the Chelsea central defenders playing well, I thought ours played very well also. But we didn't quite have enough from an attacking point of view. I wanted to talk quickly just about Ramsey on the right-hand side. My feeling on this is that Ramsey's on the right-hand side because Arsene Wenger wants Aaron Ramsey and Santi Cazorla in the team. I think Ramsey's out there because he's got more energy, can provide better cover perhaps for the fullback. But him out there, he tends to drift in field, so we get a bit narrow, and I think that was one of the issues that we had yesterday. Now, I love Santi Cazorla. I think he's absolutely brilliant. But do you feel that it's becoming an either-or situation with Ramsey and Cazorla now? I think there's only room for one of them in the centre of midfield.
I think... and you'd bring someone else in on the right, ideally.
Yeah.
I think that Ramsey's out on the right simply to get Ramsey into the team. I think Arsene likes what he offers. I thought he had some great touches yesterday, actually, on Ramsey.
Yeah.
And he's a goal threat. But I do think that he likes Cazorla in this central role. And, you know, if you think about the importance of partnerships in teams... Cazorla and Coquelin has actually developed into a really effective pairing, and I don't think Arsene wants to disturb that. Ramsey on the right, very narrow, always going to drift in field. I'd like to see someone maybe with a bit more natural pace out there, as opposed to unnatural pace. I don't know what that would be.
I don't know. Maybe jet wheels or something like that. That would be unnatural.
Yeah. I mean, I'd take that too if we can get that.
Sure.
So yeah, I think it is approaching that point, but the problem is... I mean, who would you bring in on the right-hand side? Would you be looking at Theo Walcott, Danny Welbeck?
Could you play Danny Welbeck on the left-hand side, Alexis on the right?
Mm.
That, you know, that front trio of Alexis, Giroud and Welbeck worked pretty well a few times this season.
Yeah.
So that could be one way of doing it. I mean, I think had Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain been fit, then he would be the guy that you could play out there as well.
I think he's on his form in the first half of the season. I think he's sort of ahead in the race for that position.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it doesn't look like we'll see him again this year, does it?
Yeah, seems to be a bit dodgy. All right.
A couple of quick things. What did you make of the boring chance? Do you think? Because I find that really interesting. Because I know that there's probably a hint of irony to it too, because it was levelled at us for so long. But I also kind of think. They must just not care at all.
But why? Chelsea, really. Why would he care? I mean, I don't understand why the media cares so much. It's like Arsenal fans having in their own stadium, just taking the piss a little bit. It's football, for fuck's sake. So, you know, they're chanting boring Chelsea. That's not to say that fucking Chelsea aren't deserved winners of the Premier League, because they will be. Because they're top of the league, they've got great points. Lead over everyone else, you know. But this idea that, you know, somehow we should all be shocked and outraged that there's a little bit of I hate to use the word banter, but you know, that's just mild teasing. Like, I just don't understand. Like the journalists going to Mourinho asking him what they think of it, like telltales.
What did you hear what they were saying?
It's like shut the fuck up. Why are you even writing about it in your newspapers? As if it was some egregious offence to suggest that the way Chelsea played yesterday, which was boring, was actually boring. Mm. You know, nobody's trying to take anything away from what Chelsea are going to do, and, you know, they're going to win the Premier League. And I doubt Chelsea give a fuck either. Nobody gives a fuck. So this is perhaps a consequence of the game being a little bit less exciting than people thought. The narrative... has to, you know, there's got to be some kind of offence taken. It's just absolute bollocks.
Well, also, you know, from the press's point of view, Arsene Wenger came in, and as he often does when he comes up against Jose Mourinho, played a very straight bat in his press conference. So everyone's looking for a line, aren't they? And as soon as Mourinho gave them that thing about boring, they're like, brilliant, we've got something to say. There was nothing to say about the game. Arsene didn't say anything remotely controversial.
Yeah.
This is a quote that we can stick on the back page, so it gets blown out of all proportion subsequently. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was just the reception of Cesc Fabregas. I know we don't like to talk about him unduly, but what did you make of kind of the booing and then the applause when he was substituted?
Well, you know, I think it's just one of those things. Some people are going to think he's an asshole because of the way that he left. It's always the way, isn't it, with players who leave. You know, the minute you're not an Arsenal player anymore, why should we have any vested interest in you? And some people are a bit more vociferous about that. Some people will think that he was a fantastic player, a great player to watch for Arsenal in red and white, who gave us a lot during years when perhaps the team wasn't up to the same quality as him, and were appreciative of that. So I think what we got essentially was the full gamut of, you know, human nature. Some people like him, some people don't like him, and that was reflected in the reception. So, you know, again, yeah. It's a completely non-story for me, to be honest.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, from my point of view, I sort of thought it was ideal because during the game, he gets the kind of pantomime booing reception that I think is appropriate. And then when he goes off, if people want to show their respect or their appreciation, that's the time to do it when he's no longer an active participant for the opposition. So
yeah,
I thought it was quite good, really.
Yeah, there was a good, interesting piece by Barney Roney in the Guardian today about, the headline sort of says something about how Arsenal don't miss lightweight Cesc Fabregas, but the last thing we need is another kind of tricky small ball playing midfielder, which is a reasonable point, you know.
I'm sure we'll get a few more though come the summer.
Oh, yeah, exactly. There's a whole drawer full of them there that Arsene Wenger's going to. All right, I think that'll do it for part one. We're going to come back with part two and your questions right after this. Welcome back to part two of the Arscast Extra. This is the time when we answer your questions sent to us by Twitter, at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, with the hashtag Arscast Extra. And the first question comes today from me. So this is my question to you.
Okay.
So it's just very quickly, what did you think of Aaron Ramsey's decision not to shake hands with Piers Morgan? Piers Morgan was on his Twitter account saying how, you know, what's his name he called him, which is particularly fucking snide, wouldn't shake hands with him because back in 2012 he said, well, Ramsey is a complete and utter liability, and when he was presented with the chance to shake Morgan's hand, Aaron said, I don't think I want to do that. So
I think that's absolutely fair enough. I think he's entitled to do whatever he likes. Nice to see a bit of personality from young Aaron, who can be quite a dry figure at times. But I think, you've got to stand by what you say. Piers Morgan, one of the biggest problems with Piers Morgan is that he flip-flops quite so dramatically. And
it's almost as if he does it for effect.
Well, it is. It's almost as if he's doing it to gain attention. But I think that if I was Aaron Ramsey, I'd probably feel very similarly.
Yeah, I think it was. I enjoyed that, I have to say. And I sort of enjoyed, I don't often look at Piers Morgan's timeline, but I enjoyed the bits where he was trying to make out that all Arsenal fans were the ones, you know, who were saying he was a liability. And then after a few good games, they all changed their minds. I like the irony of that when you know, obviously referring to his flip-floppery. But yeah, well done, Aaron. That's what I say.
Indeed. Shall I ask you a question then?
Yes, please.
Well, it's not actually me. It's going to be... Who's it going to be? Let's have a look. It's going to be Steve Moore. Steve Moore 4116 on Twitter. And you touched on it earlier. He says, do you agree with Thierry Henry's comments on Sky that Giroud isn't good enough and we need four new players?
I think that it's the easiest thing in the world to say this club needs new players. Like, it's intangible. They need a world-class striker or whatever it was he said. I didn't really watch because I don't tend to watch the punditry. But
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I've seen people talk about it on Twitter. You know, what is the difference between Arsenal and Chelsea right now in terms of points? Is it 10 or 7 or 9 or what is it?
Something like that.
I'll just get the table up here. So it's 10. And they have a game in hand. So yeah, there's a lot. Oh no, they don't have a game in hand. There's a lot to make up. But I think, you know, did he actually say Giroud is not good enough?
I haven't seen it, but I'm led to believe that he said, I think Arsenal still need a world-class striker. You can't win the league with Giroud as your centre-forward.
Yeah.
Which surprises me. I mean, I suppose the important context for this is, and I don't know if you've been on top of this, but Omri's come in for quite a lot of stick this week. There have been various sort of opinion pieces criticising his punditry, saying, and the accusation has been levelled that he's a bit loath to criticise people who he's played with or that he's been associated with. I half wonder if these comments are kind of a response to that criticism, you know, that Sky have sort of told him to be a bit more forthright in his opinions. Because to be honest with you, if you look at who Chelsea's centre-forward is, Diego Costa, I'm not sure there's a significant gap between Giroud and Costa in terms of quality.
Well, certainly in terms of the goals scored this season, there's not a massive gap either, is there? Yeah. I wonder, does that now make things a little bit awkward? Because we know Thierry is around Arsenal, doing his badges and all that kind of stuff. And if he's essentially said that one of the reasons Arsenal cannot win the title is Olivier Giroud, that is going to make things a bit awkward. I mean, I think you've got to look at your squad, and if there's the chance to bring in a better player in any position, you do that, right? Mm-hmm. Particularly striker. But I don't think you could say that the reason we're not challenging for the title this season is anything to do with Olivier Giroud. It's not. The reason is we didn't play well enough in the first 3 months, 4 months of the season. Didn't find any consistency. We were short defensively. We didn't have the right balance in midfield. That's where the issue was. So, seems a bit odd to me, that one, I have to say.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a strange remark. And I also think, you know, had Giroud been fit for the entire season, we'd probably have a better points tally. Because as soon as he came back into the side, his impact was immediate. I think, I don't know. I mean, as you say, if an absolute world-class centre-forward becomes available, someone in that kind of Aguero mould, then obviously you do what you can to get them. But I don't think he's an obstacle to winning the league. I think a side contender could win the league if they were doing enough in the other departments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Like, don't drop points away at Leicester. Don't drop points at home to Hull. Don't lose to fucking shit Tottenham and draw with the shit Tottenham at home. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I find that a little bit strange. And, you know, maybe there is a bit of pressure on him to be controversial or a bit more something, less bland. I don't know. But I guess people will react to that. I mean, look, it's just shit people say on TV, isn't it? So,
yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay. This one comes from at Gunnar UK, Rob, who's at Gunnar UK. And he said the debate in Block 13 yesterday was on wanting to win the title in any way versus only doing it with style. Where do you stand?
I saw this question as well. It's a very good question. I mean, if you offered me a title win now, I think I'd take it by hook or by crook. I don't think that the style of... I think winning is more enjoyable than playing well, fundamentally.
Yeah.
That's kind of my point of view on it. And if you're winning games as a fan, I think you will be reveling in it, regardless of the style of football that you're playing. And if people criticise you for it, I think you'll be inclined to turn around and say, well, look at the league table. And I think that kind of pragmatism is important in winning a league. I mean, Chelsea are in an interesting position. I asked my brother about this. I was like, does it get to you at all, the thing of, you know, criticism of the style or what have you? And he said no, because when you're a club who's had tremendous tradition and history of playing good football and winning titles, there's a certain obligation to meet that criteria. But Chelsea are a club who are trying to establish like a dynastic sense. They're trying to establish that winning mentality. And at this stage in their trajectory, I don't think it matters as much to them. I just think they want to get trophies on the board because, as we all know, for 50 years, they didn't. So I do think it's a slightly different case. Arsenal do have this culture of good football, but I think winning's always got to come first, hasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Who gives a shit how you win it once you win it? If you can combine style and consistency and effectiveness, then all the better. But I also, you know, I think there comes a point in a season where there's perhaps a pragmatism in you know, playing in a certain way, that when you've got a 10-point lead at the top of the table, a 0-0 draw or a draw away from home against the only team that can catch you, that's just common sense. Why would you go out and play expansive, attacking, free-flowing football? You know, I wouldn't want to see us do it. Like, I'd quite happily watch us grind out a 0-0 if we were in the same position. And I think as well that perhaps, you know, Chelsea, I think in the first part of the season, played some very good football, some very good attacking football, and got the points on the board early to, you know, to enable them to play in this way. Similarly, there have been times when we've been lauded for the kind of attacking football that everyone loves to see, and it hasn't always been that great, has it? You know, there have been times where we've had this reputation for playing beautiful football, and I can remember, you know, a couple of seasons where I've just been glad it's over because, you know, the football yeah. just hasn't been that enjoyable. It hasn't been great to watch. Like, we ground out one of the years, I think we, you know, when we pipped Tottenham to the top four places, we were grinding out single goal wins. Like, there were something like 8 in our last 10 games, 1-0s and 2-1s. And the football was not in the least bit free-flowing or attractive. But the results were all that mattered. And we did that. We played football in a very pragmatic way to get the results. So, you know, I think, look, there are many sticks you can beat every team in the league with, and you can accuse them of this, that, and the other, but, you know, fuck it. It's all about winning. That's what it comes down to. And how you win isn't really relevant. Like,
no, I agree. And I think, you know, as Mourinho was leaving the press conference yesterday, someone asked him, does it bother you that you'll never be loved by the neutrals? And he just laughed. And to be honest, I think, who does want to be loved by the neutrals? You know what I mean? Who wants to be the lovable losers? Nobody.
Yeah.
I kind of think, if you're not loved by the neutrals, it's because you're, you know, no one loved Manchester United in the 1990s when they were winning everything.
And playing very good attacking football.
Exactly. You know, I sort of think it's a competitive sport. It's tribal. I sort of think if you're being loved by the neutrals, I don't know, you might not be doing something right. So, yeah, I think winning's got to come first every time.
Yeah, all right.
Is it my question?
It certainly is.
Okay, this is one from Tiki Techers, and he asks, Cazorla is technically perfect and crazily ambidextrous, but why can't he strike a ball well?
Well, you know, he can strike a dead ball very well.
Kicks,
you know, great free kicks. I thought some of the deliveries yesterday were good. You know, he can take corners. He can take free kicks with either foot. You know, we've seen him nearly score a free kick with his left foot, and he's ostensibly a right-footed player. But, you know, we've seen him take corners with his supposedly wrong foot. But his shooting is bizarre. I don't know what it is. I genuinely don't know what it is, because the moment yesterday when it opened up for him, Koscielny, I think, made an interception, charged down, cut the ball back with his left foot. Cazorla's on the edge of the box, and you're thinking, yes, come on. And he's just got the technical ability to do pretty much anything with that ball. But when he's in front of goal, his shooting has been way off. I can't think of a good reason why that is, other than he's sort of become a little bit aware of it. Because in his first season, his shooting was excellent. I think he had 12 goals, didn't he? And a couple from distance. But nowadays, they're more likely to go over the bar or wide, or the contact that he makes with the ball isn't the right one, you know? So the only thing I can think of is that he's become aware of it, and it's become a thing in his head.
Yeah, I think he does seem a bit jittery, doesn't he, when the ball comes to him in open play in front of goal.
Yeah.
He actually had a decent chance yesterday.
Yeah. Okay, let me ask you then, while we're here, if you had to choose three players from the Arsenal team, the ball is being rolled across the box to the top of the D, and there's a player coming onto it. Who are the three players in this Arsenal team that you would want to be on the end of that, the top three?
That's a great question. Aaron Ramsey's the first one who springs to mind, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the better finishers in the team still. Alexis Sanchez, I would have.
Mm-hmm.
See, now I'm struggling.
I mean, I think Giroud hits the ball well.
He does, although, yeah, I suppose when we're not used to seeing him shoot from that distance, but he's got good technique. So, yeah, I'd say Giroud as well. So they would be my three, especially with Podolski out on loan. So yeah. They would be my trio. Would you differ from that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ramsey cracks it very well. I think there was one yesterday he smashed and it hit Giroud right in the chest, nearly knocked the wind out of him. I think Giroud scored a couple of decent goals from distance from us. There was one against Manchester United, one against Man City as well, wasn't there, in the Community Shield?
Yeah, and I always remember his shot against Everton last year. Do you remember that, when it hit the bar?
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe him. Oxlade-Chamberlain as well. Got a decent shooting boots range thing.
He has, although,
But, yeah, you know, it's one of those things where, I guess when you play football every day of the week, you expect players to be a bit better at that fairly intrinsic part of the game. Maybe it's more difficult than we like to think it is.
Maybe, but it's probably the most fun to practice, you'd imagine.
Yeah. You know,
just firing off pot shots. Yeah.
Shooting practice.
Exactly, yeah. That's the bit surely everyone looks forward to. I think, is there a similarity, do you think, between Cazorla and Ozil in that respect, in that they're both extraordinarily technically gifted? They can strike a dead ball. We saw Ozil score that free kick against Liverpool. But when chances fall to them in open play, there's just a surprising lack of conviction.
I'd like to see Ozil shoot a bit more. There are times where the ball is there and he could have a crack, but I think his first inclination is to look for somebody in a better position than him. Whereas sometimes, and players have benefited from this in the past, sometimes if you do have a crack from distance and you get it pretty much on target, if it's flying through a sea of legs, or it might take a little deflection, or it might cause the keeper to push it away or rebound, you know, I think we could, as a team, be a little more ambitious when it comes to the shooting. So,
okay.
Yeah. So there you
Return
go.
Of the shoot chance.
Yes. Yes. Shoot. Okay, my turn, is it?
I think so.
All right. This one comes from Matt Corbett, who's at Matt G. Corbett. And he thinks, do you think media manipulation is required to be considered a top manager in the modern game?
What?
And I guess he's sort of referring to Mourinho and... You know,
well, he is the arch manipulator of the media, really. I mean, listen, I don't think Arsene Wenger's too bad. I mean, I think you've got to remember that journalists are absolutely enamoured with Wenger. He's apart from Mourinho, he's probably the most entertaining manager in the Premier League in terms of giving you a decent quote. Maybe it's required to be considered a great manager, because inevitably the press are drawn to people who give good copy.
Oh, yeah, good point.
But I don't think it's required to be a good manager. Ultimately, if you're winning games on the pitch, I don't think it matters a jot what you say in the press conference.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I guess it helps you shape the...
It helps shape your image and the perception of you.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But I think the results at the end of the day are what speak for themselves. I mean, Manuel Pellegrini won the league last year, but he's not the most engaging of characters, is he? But he's picked up the trophy. So
yeah.
I kind of feel what happens more often is that managers who aren't that great get a reputation that is greater than their ability based on their manipulation of the media.
Oh, so is this the Redknapp principle?
That is the Redknapp principle, yeah. But there are a few other exponents out there, but I think he's sort of the king of that particular trick.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that's the key word, isn't it? To be considered a top manager rather than to be a top manager. Yeah. Okay, good. Good answer.
What? Okay, this is an interesting one. This comes from SK, who's Skiss Speaking. This is his Twitter handle.
Sounds like fun.
They're difficult for me. It does, doesn't it? He asks, if you had to play in a mask due to a broken nose, what kind of mask would it be?
I would say clown mask.
Terrifying.
Yeah, terrifying, because clowns obviously are really, really scary. Like, yeah, I don't like clowns, and I don't like birds, so a winged clown would be possibly the most terrifying thing I could think of. But the advantage of playing in the clown mask is that you're behind the mask, so you wouldn't be terrifying yourself. You're not looking at yourself, whereas anybody who had to look at you could be put off by this evil clown. The second one I would choose, do you remember the movie American Werewolf in London?
Mm.
And I think there's this dream sequence where, you know, he's sitting in his family home and all these strange guys come in wearing, like, evil pig masks, if I remember correctly. And then they shoot up the whole family in the place. And but those masks always, I found those a bit scary. Yeah.
That's cool. That's quite a good idea. I think I would go, you mentioned werewolf, I think I'd go for like a wolf head type mask, you know?
Yeah.
Because, A, it would obviously intimidate the opposition, but also it would allow me to feel like I was recreating the film Teen Wolf, which was quite a formative part of my adolescence.
Did you want to be a basketball hero? Is that what was going on?
Well, a footballing werewolf.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
You know, just keep it realistic.
Okay. Okay.
So that would be my answer.
All right, okay. All right, here's one from John at Ormy88, and he says, I reckon we're two top players away from the title. Going back to what Thierry said, he reckons four, but he says, I've no idea which two players they are. Do you?
Messi and Ronaldo. I don't know. I don't know, to be honest with you. It's actually, I find this summer a very difficult one to call. You know, normally I think we go into summer and there's a very clear sense of, well, we must sign X precision. Do you know what I mean? We must sign a centre half, we must sign a holding midfielder, we must sign a centre forward.
Yeah.
I feel like this year it's much more difficult to say. We have a more complete squad than we're accustomed to. So what it really, you know, I'm going to sound like Arsene Wenger here, but what it really becomes about is that whole super quality thing. Can you find someone who's better than what you've got?
Mm.
And I think if you can do that in any position, it's worthwhile. Whether it's two or four, I don't know. I think I just think it depends on who's available, because I don't think there's barely a position in which it's worth buying for the sake of buying, for the sake of depth.
Yeah.
I think it's only worth doing at this stage if it's an upgrade on what's available.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that with a couple of players, we could easily be competitive in the title race next season. I don't think we need four players, and I think the idea of four players coming in is pretty unrealistic. I mean, I think
a lot would have to go out.
Well, I think we're going to see some departures. I don't think Thomas Rosicky will be around next season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Matthew Flamini will be around next season.
No, nor do I.
I suspect that Santi might go back to Spain in the summer. Mm-hmm.
I think there's a good chance of that.
But what I think will happen in those situations is that the natural attrition, if you like, of the Flamini and the Rosicky will be made up for by Oxlade-Chamberlain, by Jack Wilshere being given more chances in the first team. Whether or not those gaps can be filled with a signing. I mean, I think if you were to bring in a really top goalkeeper, and if you were to bring in somebody who would can play with or give backup to, is everything all right there? Has something happened?
Some sort of package has come through the door.
Right. Okay. It wasn't like a picture falling off the wall in a precursor to a poltergeist style adventure. No.
Not yet. No.
All right. Okay. Well, that's good. So maybe if you got in like a Schneiderlin. So you've got Coquelin and Schneiderlin as your options there, because, you know, if you don't have Coquelin, then what do you do? So maybe that's where you need the backup. So I think two players. If I had to pick two, I'd pick another strong midfield player, and I'd pick a really good goalkeeper.
And would you... The one I sometimes wonder about is that third position in the front three. If you think Olivier Giroud, I think on this season's form, is going to maintain his place. Obviously, Alexis Sanchez. I know we talked about Oxlade-Chamberlain on that right-hand side, but I feel like if there's room for an attacking signing, that's where it might be.
Yeah, yeah. I do wonder. I don't know if we're going to see much in the way of attacking signings. Unless he can get something... Something like the Dortmund guy, you know?
Royce, maybe. Yeah. I think, yeah, attackers would have to leave, but we have got three out on loan whose futures are in some doubt, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been there. I don't think any of them will make it or will come back, to be honest. Maybe Sanogo will come back, but again, would probably go out on loan once more.
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right. Have you got another one? One more?
I don't know if I have, actually.
You said at the start when we were discussing this, you said, I've got loads of questions. And I said,
I was bragging.
I'm not sure if I've got enough questions, you know, picked out or enough variety. And you said, don't worry about it. Just ask me. I've got loads of questions. So here we are.
But here's the issue.
Right.
Some of the questions I had, you have since asked me.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bit of overlap.
Exactly. There's been some serious overlap. We've both recognised the quality of those particular questions.
Mm.
So it's, you know, it's all gone to pot, really.
Mm.
I'm now scrolling through the questions. I mean, obviously there are loads, and they're all worthwhile.
Yeah. Well,
do you want to do one more?
Well, I think we better now. You know, we've set the expectation. So you continue to scroll until you find one. I can add in some incidental music if you like.
Okay. Yeah. Please do.
I will. Even after all that music, you couldn't find anything. So I've got one here, and it came in actually by email, so that's why I didn't think I had it. It came in from Gunnar in China, whose name is Eamon. And he says, after our 2-0 defeat to Chelsea earlier this season, the panel on the live Arscast Extra unanimously agreed that Arsenal would not win another Premier League title under Arsene Wenger. Given what you have seen this season since then, do you now believe we can?
Ooh. Ooh. He's clever, isn't he? He's got us there.
Yeah.
I'm much more optimistic, certainly. Yes, I think we could, which is a massive turnaround.
Yeah.
Like I when I said that back in September, I think it was.
October.
I was absolutely certain in my conviction that it wouldn't happen. You know, but I think the main thing that's changed, genuinely, has been Francis Coquelin. I don't know if I necessarily thought that Arsene Wenger would ever buy a player who was that focused on the defensive aspect of the game. He'd neglected to do so for so long. But the fact that we've sort of stumbled upon one has changed the whole balance of the team, really, and makes me feel a lot better about our title chances for next season. I think it'll be very difficult because of the nature of the competition. But I wouldn't rule it out. And that is the success of this season, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been very difficult. That's the thing. It's never been an easy thing to achieve. But I think we put ourselves in a position where we made it more difficult for ourselves than it really should have been. You know, particularly after the start to the season. I don't think the 2-0 defeat to Chelsea was a huge damaging issue for our title hopes. That was 3 points. It was all the other games that we dropped points in. And if you'd asked me around Christmas time, I still probably would have said no. But I think there's been enough encouragement that I would suggest with the right purchases that, yes, we could. Not that we will, because, you know, I'm not fortune teller, but I think the manager has to get some credit for changing the team around. Even if he did stumble upon the Coquelin thing, you know, as a unit, it's much more balanced. The run of form that we're on, you know, some of that obviously has got to be down to the manager as well. So yeah, I think we could. Once we get those 8 players in this summer, and the 12 players over the January transfer window, then I think it's certainly possible.
Look at us, we're flip-flopping.
God, you're like Piers Morgan.
I know. We'll ask and shake our hand. Remains to be seen.
It does indeed. I don't think I want to do that. Look.
I mean, if he's seen me dressed as him in a wig, I think he's going to have reservations anyway.
I think so.
Have I spoken about this before? My constant terror whenever I'm in a press conference with him that he may have come across one of those videos and that he might recognise me. That is something that genuinely haunts me. Whenever I ask him a question and he looks at me a funny way, I'm like, oh God, he knows.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. So if it just twigged in his brain, like, you know, and then he'd be, it's you. It's you. I don't sing like that. How dare you? I wonder what Arsene is like as a singer. You think he's a good singer?
I'm sure he's better than me. I mean, I don't know. I imagine he enjoys a little sing. So everyone says he's quite a jovial character behind the scenes. What sort of music do you think he likes?
I don't know, but maybe you should ask him in a press conference and say, Arsene, what is your favourite song from a snow-themed Pixar movie with three words in the title? Last one, go. Second one, it. You know, what would be your favourite? And just, you know, try tease it out of him.
Maybe. I think I've done enough teasing of Arsene Wenger in my time.
Yeah, I'd say he likes Guns N' Roses.
Exactly. I think Rosicky's got him into the metal.
Yeah, I can see Arsene wearing, like, the kilt and everything.
Yeah, that would be a strong look for him.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
I'd like that on the bench.
Yeah, Arsene Wenger in a red kilt and cycling shorts underneath. Mm. That would be great.
That would be smashing.
All right.
Well, look, we're all friends now, us and Arsene. We're going to win the league next year, so...
All right.
Exciting times.
We won't be here next Monday, will we? Because we're not playing until Monday night when we face Hull away from home. So we have a good long week to rest and recuperate, get all those tired limbs up to speed before we go to Humberside next Monday. So we'll have an Arsecast Extra for you on Tuesday. We'll do that.
Okay. Good
Tuesday, and we can discuss what happens against Hull. Arsecast regular will be here on Friday. Until then, have a good week.
Bye bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.